On episode 201 of the Happy Market Research Podcast, I'm talking with the dynamic duo Anne Green and Stephen DeMarco from Kantar. This is an exciting episode. We unpack customer experience from Kantar's position, one of the leading insights professional companies in our industry. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Greenbook. The Greenbook directory helps you find marketing research suppliers, facilities, and consultants. Additionally, Greenbook helps modern marketing researchers understand industry trends via the GRIT Report and the IIEX Global Conference Series. To find out more, please visit Greenbook online at greenbook.org. Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. My guests today are Anne Green, EVP, and Stephen DeMarco, Chief Digital Officer at Kantar North America Insights Division. Kantar is a multinational market research firm known for innovation. They actively manage Brand Z, which is an annual top 100 most valuable global brands ranking, and in 2015 announced a partnership with Snapchat to provide the first analysis of advertising effectiveness on the Snapchat platform. Anne and Stephen, thank you very much for joining me today on the Happy Market Research Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Our chat is going to center around one of today's hottest topics, customer experience. But before we dive in, I'd love to know a little bit about each one of your backgrounds.
Well, I think it is fair to say that no child grows up and actually says, "Mom, Dad, I want to go into the field of market research." So it was a bit of a fluke for me. I ended up at a liberal arts school where I studied marketing with a math minor. And at the time, I really didn't have a good sense of what I wanted to do. And I saw an ad, an actual newspaper ad for a position and in the field of market research. And it just so happened, I thought, I could do this. And the rest is history.
So, you know, it's funny, several people that I've interviewed wound up in market research through an advertisement in the paper, which for those that don't know, that was a jobs listing for local opportunities.
Yes. I have just revealed my age.
Oh, don't worry. I'm ahead of you. That's fine. So Stephen, you managed marketing at Comedy Central, FX, and you co-founded a startup during the height of the dot-com bubble. How in the world did you wind up in research?
It's funny. I don't see myself in research, but I will tell you how I got into the role that I'm in right now. Like Anne, I studied marketing in college. And when I wasn't studying or doing other things that college kids do, I was actually a DJ for the campus radio station. So I've always had a strong interest in marketing and music. I started my career at a record label doing everything you can imagine and decided that while I like music, the music industry isn't for me. So I thought long and hard and really committed myself to marketing and helping marketers become better marketers. And so what better place to do that than a company who's got a treasure trove of consumer data that you can use to make difficult decisions about all of the things that marketers need to, ranging from which customers to target, how to engage them, how to measure ROI. So I guess ultimately I did wind up in a research role.
So we're going to talk about customer experience. It's gone through such an evolution over the last two decades of my career. What are two ways that Kantar is creating amazing experiences for your customers?
Well, we have the opportunity to work with most of the Fortune 500. So we are working with folks, the likes of Google, Facebook, McDonald's, Coke, American Express, Cap One, you name it. And there is an interesting common thread that is emerging, that they are very much looking for research companies to raise the bar, both in terms of the suppliers, the partners that they work with, as well as internally. And they're raising the bar in terms of how they use research within the organization. We've really invested in two areas, in changing up the experience that we provide. And the first is around client engagement. So we really work with marketers to understand what their pain points are, what their problems are. So we don't work on a project or a product basis. What we do is we really partner up with brands to understand and get underneath the hood in terms of what it is we need to solve for. And we invest in our own teams. We actually train them in terms of listening skills, in terms of discovery skills, so they can really feel confident in getting to that point of shared understanding of the problem in front of them. I think the second way in which we're changing up the experience is with delivery. If you think about the delivery reports, they have, you know, legacy basis been data tables or a PowerPoint report, or if you were lucky, some sort of dashboard. And that doesn't necessarily get absorbed by the organization. That just becomes something that sits on somebody's shelf or sits in a folder on their laptop. What we need to do and what we are doing is we are really investing in the delivery of our research and going beyond standard reports and providing our clients with workshops where all stakeholders come together and talk about what the findings are and, most importantly, what to do with them. How do we action them?
Okay, so the pain points is really interesting. The thesis that I entered into in September when I launched this podcast is that there is a growing divide between what marketing research at an agency level is delivering versus what the brands actually want. And in many cases, I'm thinking specifically about the interview with Stacey Walker at Adobe recently. You know, she actually used that framework as well, that, you know, it's about it, you can't just force this standard methodological approach anymore. And then similarly on the delivery side, it's, you know, it's not about the report or the thump factor, which is, again, paper-based reports, thicker is better, right? In the old days, but it's about operating research in lockstep with the executives and at each point that decisions are being made. And that's one of the reasons why she believes that things like CX is growing far and away faster than traditional market research as a job function inside of brands.
I think you're absolutely right, Jamin. And so Adobe is actually another client of ours, and we're doing some innovative work for them. So it's great for us to stop doing the type of research that's backwards looking, maybe interesting, and sits in a bookcase somewhere, and much more interesting to partner up with the client, co-create on what they're looking for, provide the insights that they need at the moment in time that they need them so that they can generate a business decision that has an ROI. So that's, you know, kind of tongue in cheek why I said, I don't see myself as a market researcher. I see myself as a clever person who knows his way around data in the effort to make a business decision.
I love that. And then, you know, and then the final delivery, you know, to your point where we used to, you know, deliver crosstabs and then PowerPoints and written reports in many cases, to later dashboards being really, you know, the monitoring of the overall organizational health. Recently, I asked another insights leader about dashboarding capabilities. And finally, I looked at him and I said, tell me one time or what dashboard is actually that you actually use to make business decisions. And, you know, it was hard pressed to come up with more than one. And that is actually centered more around BI as opposed to, you know, market consumer insights. So it's about the deliverable here is the benefit of the organization to make good decisions and actually have a positive ROI on research as opposed to it being a cost center.
Yeah. I talk about dashboards being three categories. One is always on. So it's up on your screen. You're looking at it because you can't live your life without it. One is alert based, which is when something happens, you get a text message or something to go check it out. Or the third is ad hoc. You go there when you need it and you enter in a search query and hopefully you get back what you need. Much better to be in the always on category. Lucky if you're in the alert category. Not good to be in the ad hoc category because that's where most of them are.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's where the disruption is taking place, of course. So how are brands using your research specifically effectively to empower their CX?
Overall, I think if you look at brands and their perspective on customer experience, some brands really embrace it because they recognize as consumers, our customer experience has changed. We've got different expectations based on mobile devices, based on on-demand services like Uber or Blue Apron. Like, we just have an expectation that we can accomplish a task whenever we want, wherever we want. And so smart brands are looking at that and saying, okay, we need to really think about how we develop a customer experience that emulates that. So the first thing I think brands are looking at doing is some really primary research around what are the needs, known and unmet needs in the category, so that they can really hone their value proposition. So it's really around kind of strategy research, trying to uncover the gem that allows them to develop a differentiated customer value proposition, and then the operational plan to deliver on it. So it's really kind of recreating, reinventing the brand promise as a whole. And so that's the first thing that brands are doing. The second thing that brands are doing is what's quite popular right now, and evidenced very clearly last week by the acquisition of Qualtrics, which is a CX platform for $8 billion. So that is $8 billion by
on about a $400 million run rate, right? That's what's even more insane. 20x top line revenue. And we know that Sample, like, there are some like sunk costs in that multiple that are still, you know, they're getting credit for, which is just speaks to the overall market view of the value of this category.
Yeah, it's a very heated market. So $8 billion by SAP. What we've since learned is that Qualtrics, Medallia, and SurveyMonkey, who are all in this kind of at different levels collecting customer information so you can analyze and act on it, they're all backed by Sequoia Ventures, which is a VC firm. So I have to give credit to the partner team at Sequoia for their investment thesis that this software as a service capability was going to be really, really, really profitable. So they made a great bet. Anyway, back to the story. Once brands have these CX platforms, whether it's Medallia or Qualtrics implemented, they have an always on feed of customer insights that they're getting that they can use to understand as we've rolled out this new brand promise, and it is taking effect in how we touch our customers, whether it's through online interactions or retail interactions, or through, if it's a car dealer, through, you know, their dealership or agency interactions. Are we delivering on the brand promise at all points in time? And so it gives them a real-time information feed about where they're performing, where they're underperforming, to really continue to hone and advance their customer experience. So it's a soup to nuts approach to really reengineering how people think about engaging with their customers around the brand promise and then delivering on it all the way through to purchase and post-service interaction.
What does that look like from a product? Is it really a combination of, like, I'll call it software that is the logistical element of the pulse of the customer, and then the human element, obviously, on the deployment of those systems, and then also the ongoing recommendations?
I mean, you nailed it, right? It's basically technology-enabled data collection and dissemination through a software-as-a-service model. So companies will have a Qualtrics platform implemented for them and instrumented for them based on whatever business they're in, whether it's, you know, the hotel, airline, auto, retail, financial services. You know, it works for any company that has customers. These platforms work. And so they're instrumented similar to how a CRM system, Salesforce.com, an ERP system, you know, it's a piece of enterprise software that you access through a portal. But even though you're collecting all of this information and it's getting displayed through this portal or the website, you really still need a lot of professional services. You need help interpreting the data. You need help taking action on the data and making sure that your actions are generating ROI. You need help connecting more data into the CX system so you can start to bring transaction data in, other first-party data, maybe bring in third-party data like weather data. So how is weather impacting customer experience at any different point in time? It's a piece of software that needs a lot of contextualization around it.
I think it's really interesting, though, to think about customer experience in terms of why it's become such an important topic for marketers lately. And Stephen, you had mentioned that really the customer experience is the way to deliver and bring to life the brand purpose. And that has become such an important element because financially, if you look at the economic trends, one of the things that you find is that people are spending more on experiences than they are on things or products. So financially, for marketers to grow, it makes sense for them to be spending a lot more time in understanding what that experience could be, what people's expectations are, and how they can deliver against that experience in new and different ways. Just think about, Delta. Many years ago, Delta was simply a means to get from one place to another. It was a flight. Now Delta has become an experience. It's everything from your onboard services to being able to order a cocktail in the at the actual gate. So this is something that is very much financially driven and recognized as an area of importance to brands today.
It's so interesting. Companies like Starbucks, in a lot of ways, built their whole company around this thesis. And it feels like we, as an industry over the last year or two, really just started catching up with framing it in words, right? And then figuring out what the terms of trade look like. And I really like, Stephen, your framing of this, like, context of data. That piece, traditionally, from my experience, market research data, behavioral, transactional, whatever, usually sits in some silo, and getting those things overlaid is immensely powerful, but oftentimes timing prohibitive. So, the fact that you're helping connect the dots on through your set of solutions is really important. And then I think the second part of it that's really interesting is this, I've been hearing this term, it's not like a new term, but I've been hearing it said more lately, HI or human intelligence versus AI or SaaS or what have you, right? So it's about the leveraging of the human expertise to, overlay and help even create a deeper context of those insights so that that can move the business in the right direction.
Yeah, we've actually had success with both of those. So we have a really excellent qualitative capability. Many, many, many people across North America, at least, who have a strong background in qual, who will then help contextualize the data, again, to use that phrase, that's coming out of a Qualtrics or Medallia. Because if you don't, you're just going to get a lot of behavioral data, and you lose that human element, you lose the why, you lose really, the kind of core idea that makes it an experience versus a transaction. But at the same time, we have a really incredible analytics team who does, machine learning, neural nets, and are just spectacular at that, which you're not going to get out of a typical CX platform yet. They're just not that advanced. So you really do need the two of those. You need that combination of human understanding, but connected data, technology-powered analytics to get to that next level of insight that's going to drive the differentiated customer experience.
All right, so let's take it down then to sort of brass tacks. If you were a brand manager at a startup CPG company, so not Procter & Gamble per se, what types of research would you do in your first year, assuming you had a finite budget of $250,000?
Was your comment take it down, or was that a reflection of me being on my soapbox too much?
Not at all.
Okay, good. I promise I won't go up there again during the podcast, but
I liked it. I liked it. We all liked it.
Sorry. And the non-soapbox is yours.
So I think taking it to a very practical level, one of the things I was just talking about was the change in terms of people's expectations, in terms of their experiences. Foundationally, marketers need to have a new understanding of people. They need to demonstrate that they really understand people. And I think there's an assumption because we have so much data that we must have a good understanding of people. And that's not necessarily the case. With data, what you have is observations, you have behaviors, but you also need to understand what people feel, what they think, how they live, what their personal pain points are, and what they want brands to solve for. So in all honesty, where I would start is with something that is much more ethnographic in nature, much more segmentation-based, to get to a foundational understanding of how I can establish a brand that really demonstrates it gets the consumer, it gets the customer.
And your question is that whether it's P&G or a startup CPG company, you can almost assume that most companies, when it comes to research, are doing kind of this zero-based budgeting approach. So, you know, another way of kind of framing your question is, what's the first thing you would spend research on if you were a brand manager, assuming that you had to argue for every other piece of research? And I could not agree more with Anne, because that foundational segmentation research is going to pay dividends over years of time as more and more marketing programs are built off of those foundational insights. And those foundational insights are going to be the things that allow you to differentiate in the market in the first place. You know, doing an advertising effectiveness study to demonstrate media ROI is important because you want to know, did this piece of content distributed on this media platform have a greater return than another piece of content on another media platform? But there you're still just kind of like optimizing at the edges. What Anne's talking about is really kind of game-changing foundational researches. And if you do it right, then that first year budget of $250 is going to generate such valuable insights and actions that $250 is going to turn into $500K the next year, into $1 million the year after that, which is kind of like a self-funding research program, which is what we advise clients to try and do. And if we're not providing ROI on our research and our clients aren't getting ROI out of the actions that we're taking, they're taking on our recommendations, and Houston, we have a problem, as they say.
I like that a lot, and I'll misquote, of course, but like, data isn't understanding, it is observation. And you have to connect this to the human's feelings, right? The consumer's feelings, whether it's positive or negative or what have you, in order to get that full context of how the rest of the data or the projects that you do and the inputs that you get, you know, to understand how they make sense and what they actually mean and what the organization should do. So there's lots of new fancy technologies. We got to talk a little bit about that. AR, VR, so augmented reality, virtual reality, you know, voice, whether it's Google Home or Alexa, this all is impacting consumer experience. How will they impact research? Alexa, stop. Sorry.
That's good. You said Alexa versus Google. Interesting. Now we know where your loyalty lies.
I have both, FYI.
Good save. It's interesting. It's a really good question. So these new technologies kind of play in two dimensions at the same time. Brands are using them to create new customer experiences, right? So there are, using Alexa as an example, you know, brands are building out skills or actions on my Alexa just turned on, as I said, that it's now glowing blue. They're building out actions and skills that help kind of ingrain them in the voice activated world. They're not selling as much as they're providing content that keeps them relevant. So it's happening in the consumer space. So we need to figure out how to conduct research there. And we've started to do that. You know, we've been working on chatbots for a while. We have a chatbot that we use where we direct some of our respondents to go, or people that we're interviewing. We've actually built out a couple of pilots on my voice controlled device that I'm not going to name right now, lest it turn blue again. And so it's their information collection platforms for us. Right now, they are information collection platforms. They have not become insight collection platforms. Part of it is because the technology is different than writing a survey or analyzing a piece of customer data that might come in through a transaction log or a website visitation. How you guide a consumer through a series of questions, it's a whole new art form. I mean, it is absolutely a new language. And the devices themselves are not always responding to different dialects, to different brand names, to different product names. So we're going through the process. It's a learning process to use them as research mechanisms. And we're figuring it out as we go.
Sorry, we talk a lot about the nature of the experience changing and the nature of the desired consumer experience changing. And I think it's really important that these tools be used in a new way to engage with people, because they are much more organic ways of engaging with them than we have had historically. You know, they are very used to utilization of chatbots, whether or not they know they are chatbots or not. They are used to the nature of that interface. They are used to being able to use voice skills and ask for things or give information to their device. They are used to being able to do things more in the moment. So imagine being able to use a voice device when somebody mentions a specific brand and having the ability to ask them questions about that brand. So it's just it's going to become much more organic and natural and part of a understood experience for people than it ever has been before. And it removes a lot of the artificiality that we have had in research historically.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, the voice framework is, you know, obviously the prequel to AR and augmented reality and virtual reality. Although obviously there's technology that's centered around all those things now, none of it's operating at scale. And yet we have seen an opportunity to get closer to the consumer through voice, right? So the consumption of content all of a sudden becomes passive, right? The way that I can interact with my brand, app, or skill while I'm driving is completely different than it has to be, you know, has been historically, whether it's, you know, purchasing something, which I've actually done on this show on accident. I purchased some paper towels on the device that won't be named. And then I also purchased some markers. So the paper towels actually showed up. It was a different brand than I thought, which is a whole different thing. And then the markers, I canceled that order because it was like a $3,500 order. And I think I bought all the markers in North America.
But what you're talking about there is an important variable that Stephen mentioned earlier, is that we need to help marketers understand how to use these devices as part of their own marketing efforts and to use it as part of their own sort of commerce initiatives. If you look at how these devices have completely transformed the commerce environment, you know, how products are sold, it is hugely different. And the role that they play and the path to purchase, whether or not it's getting something on the shopping list or getting directions to the store or adding something into the cart, is a completely different experience. So there's two components to this. One is about helping marketers enter this space wisely and really understand the expectations of this space and how it can be optimized. But then there is the second transformative component, which is, how do I use these techniques to do better research and to get better insights?
Yeah, and I like your very practical example of a way to be able to do that. You know, the other piece that's interesting is the brand budget consideration, right? So if you think about an add-on service, you know, I'll call it just surveying through voice, brand experience or what have you, right? That doesn't fit squarely in the qualitative and quantitative bucket. Are you guys seeing brands become more adaptive to where they're willing to spend through new technologies or approaches, or more like qualitative at scale, which is kind of what we're talking about?
I think, to be honest, I think it's early days. And so brands are seeing it as experimental. And not putting it into a type of bucket yet, other than they're either going to put it into an experimental bucket, or they've got a bucket called voice, and it's tied to someone on the marketing team or on the strategy team that said, we need a voice strategy. What's the voice strategy for our brand? And then they run off and they try and do some stuff and come back to satisfy a question. But it is not hit scale yet. So it really hasn't normalized yet. I mean, Anne, I don't know what your sense is.
No, I totally agree. I think it is something that marketers are playing with, that brands are playing with on both fronts in terms of sort of the marketing commercial side for their own businesses, as well as the research side. But they are truly playing with it. They are not committed to this yet. But it relates very nicely to the idea of experience, because they know this will be part of their brand experience. And how do I manage that? What are my expectations?
Yeah. I mean, it's just not there yet. The distribution of devices, you could argue, this is where I put my kind of marketing research methodology hat on. You have to worry about the distribution of the devices and are they representative? And then all of the other issues around the language that you need to speak to get insights that you can really rely on to take action on out of the, call it qual, call it conversation, call it survey, voice activated survey, whatever it is. It's like playing in a sandbox right now. We're not anywhere ready to scale it in any way.
I think one of the things that we found was really interesting with some initial work that we had done was that the device and the research had been trained based upon British English as opposed to American English, and how that small seeming subtlety could actually really throw off the learning from these types of engagements. So we do have to be really smart and really disciplined as to how we engage in this space.
And not to change the direction completely, but you started off by talking about kind of AR, VR. I think virtual reality is an easier paradigm to get to work quicker because it's replicating an in-person experience that people, while it's virtual, people are familiar with what it's like to walk down an aisle and then pick a product off a shelf or interact by opening the door of a car. Like there's nothing new there. It's just that the technology that's required to do it is extremely expensive and complicated. What we're talking about on the voice side is the technology may not be as expensive or complicated, but the human interaction is entirely new. And sometimes it makes you scratch your head, like, how are we going to solve this one?
Yeah, the invisible customer journey is a big problem, and will become a big problem for the brands that aren't connecting at an emotional level, so that when the consumer of the dish soap or whatever, you know, place their order in 5 years, I don't know when that's going to happen, right? It better not be dish soap. And what's interesting is, you know, I know that Google and Amazon are buying a lot of the generic names. So like generic paper towels, yeah, is now owned by Amazon, mm-hmm, I believe.
Yeah.
So that all of a sudden puts squarely the purchase power in Amazon in Amazon's lap. Which there's a million different ways they could, well, there's probably like half a dozen ways they could monetize that, either through the CPGs, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it's, you're right. It's not at scale, but it's also something that brands need to be paying attention to, because once it hits scale, it's going to be really hard to be able to become, you know, to address.
Well, this is what we talk about with our clients, a lot, which is what we're really going through is an incredible period of disruption, with, you know, basically what worked yesterday and what works today, maybe almost as good, is not going to work at all in the paradigm of tomorrow. Like we are at the top of the proverbial S curve. And if we spend dollars and time and energy, advancing on the same path, we're only going to go down the wrong side of the S curve. We really need to jump onto a new curve. And that is where we're counseling clients to spend as much money as they can on thinking about voice as one, investing in machine learning as another, which is probably why the whole CX category as a whole is so hot right now, because there is a lot of good information, insights, and data that's coming in all the time that you can analyze.
So you've given us a lot of value today. I'm really appreciative. This next question is your right hook opportunity. So you could tell our audience maybe a little bit about what Kantar is offering right now that's got you guys really excited.
Well, I would actually say, related to what we've just been talking about, the work that we are doing in the field of artificial intelligence really excites me. Now, it also scares me a little bit, because the area that we're primarily applying artificial intelligence is in the space of creative. So it's a really interesting balance of art and science. And we talked before about the notion of human intelligence. This is a space where you can never leave sort of the human element behind. You can never leave behind the idea of human-led storytelling. But what artificial intelligence is allowing us to do is to get more into a data-driven optimization space. And we are focusing on three primary areas. One is the classification of creative. How can you get to better tagging of assets within creative to understand what the parameters you should operate in, what works better for your brands versus the competitors? What are some of the subtle cues that you can include in your creative to make it better? The second is diagnostics. So being able to use natural language processing to better understand how people are interpreting the stories that we are telling them. Do they actually get the key themes? And going back to the conversation we were just having about voice devices, being able to get people to just talk about a piece of creative that they may have just seen, sort of connecting the visual experience with the voice experience and getting that understanding and that diagnostic of creative using artificial intelligence. And then the third is prediction. Stephen had mentioned earlier, we have this amazing analytics team. And what they are doing within the creative space is very impressive in terms of getting to a better understanding of predictive capabilities. So what if you had an ad that did well in the United States? Would it actually transfer to another market? Would you be able to use it intact in India? Or would you be able to adhere to, or are you adhering to certain brand guidelines with your creative and not having to make that a manual process? So there's a huge amount of efficiency that can be driven by better application of artificial intelligence into the creative process. But at the same time, we can't lose that human element.
I think, and as I always do, I think she's absolutely spot on. And then I have to add my oddball build on what she said. So rather than what product am I excited, I'll talk about what capability I'm excited about that we're trying to empower our clients with. And the analogy that I would use is a juggler. So Jamin, have you ever tried juggling?
I am embarrassed to say I have tried on a number of occasions, usually a lightly intoxicated and always catastrophic
exactly.
outcome.
So that you put yourself in the shoes of a marketer, right, who can probably juggle one ball easily, if not too intoxicated, right? You throw in a second ball, it starts to stretch their brain a little bit. And then you throw in a third ball, and all hell starts to break loose, right? I think it's the move from the second ball to the third ball that gets people going. And what I'm talking about, each of these balls are different factors influencing what marketing decisions they need to take and when, and in order to engage a customer and drive growth. So let's just say that you're a marketer who's made it to three ball juggling, and then somebody throws in an apple. And I'm going to say, okay, I figured out how to deal with the three balls, but now I've got to figure out an apple. I'm going to take a bite out of that apple every time I do it. That's a whole new skill set. Then somebody throws in a bowling pin, and you've got to still keep it going. And then somebody throws in a meat cleaver. And then somebody throws in the flaming, running chainsaw. And as a marketer, you've got to figure out how to keep all of these things going in unison. You've got to manage in the short term and the long term. You've got to use qualitative data. You've got to use quantitative data. You've got to figure out how to leverage surveys. You've got to figure out how to leverage transactional data. You've got to manage privacy while driving personalization. It's absolute mayhem for a marketer right now. And I think what I'm excited about is we're walking in their shoes because we're feeling the same pressure. We're empathetic about what they're trying to accomplish and how hard it is to accomplish it. And we've got either the right set of capabilities internally or the right partnerships externally or the self-confidence to say, we don't know what we're doing, but we're happy to try and learn it together with you to help marketers become really good jugglers and not have catastrophic consequences.
Yes, like losing arms and et cetera, which is quite literally the picture of, you know, some real life examples I've had trying to keep track of.
Yep.
I don't even know what the word is. Myriad isn't it, right? So it's just so much that a marketer has to pay attention to in order to be able to maximize the ROI on effort.
Exactly.
And that's a great application, and that you just, you know, that of AI, where you're addressing the creative, because that's the piece that's the most difficult to separate in understanding those, you know, those drivers, whether it's video or elements of videos or what have you. My guests today, Anne Green, Stephen DeMarco, thank you both very much for being on the Happy Market Research Podcast.
Jamin, thank you for having us. It was a great conversation.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for this episode's CEO Hack, brought to you by Melanie Courtwright of Research Now SSI.
Yeah. And even as an executive now, one of the things I try to make sure I do is stay close to consumers. The best way to help our brands and clients be close to their consumers is by being close to consumers ourselves. Spend time following their trends, knowing what devices they're using. There's nothing more important than just really understanding consumers if you want to help clients make decisions about them.
I absolutely love how she talks about one of the keys to success. And this is not just for CEOs. This is for everybody inside of an organization. We have got to add value to our customers. And the only way we do that is to operate with the lens that they are operating in. And that is, we have to figure out who their customer is and get to know that customer, because that provides the context of the insights that we deliver for them. And thank you, everyone who's been tuning in. As always, if you are listening, like, share, leave your feedback. It is a way that other insights professionals can find this podcast and take advantage of the knowledge. Have a great rest of your day.